This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
All right, welcome to the Underground. I'm super glad you guys came out tonight. We've been going through the Beatitudes. Let me read Matthew 5, verse 9. It says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Let me read another passage too. This, I believe, goes along with it. This is Romans 12, verse 17. "Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone." Pretty simple. Let's all go do that. Just kidding. One more. James 4, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but you do not get. You cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God." These are all big scriptures, huh? So obviously we're talking about conflict tonight. I'm talking about being a peacemaker. And it is my hope tonight that I would be ministered to myself from this beatitude. It's pretty revealing. I think everyone here has conflict if you're around human beings. I mean, I have conflict when I'm by myself too. The cat, you know. Yeah, I think he's lived way too long. You know, when I first met my wife, you know, I'm trying to impress her, and she's like, "Look, I have this cat," and I'm like, "Oh, that's great." You know, I really don't like cats. And now we've been together this long, I'm looking at the cat, and I'm like, "Man, how long do these things live?" Crying out loud. And it's weird. The other day in the kitchen, it was looking at me, and I know it was thinking the same thing about me. Super weird. But we all have conflict. Think about conflict you had in the past. Think about conflict you're in the middle of right now. And we're all impacted by it. This is huge. Me personally, I have lost jobs over my inability to handle conflict correctly. I have lost relationships that I wanted, relationships I loved, over my inability to handle conflict. I have left churches over my inability to handle conflict. Like, shall I go on? Right? How about you? That's kind of what I'm getting to. I've lost a lot. Listening to a kind of a high-powered lawyer this week talking about, he kind of specializes in settlements, in settling. And I mean like big cases, high-profile cases. He specializes in getting people to settle. And he was talking about it, super interesting. He was saying how important it is to settle things quickly. And he said that the longer a conflict drags out, it's like a forest fire, the more damage is done. And that when people, corporations, people versus companies, all this kind of stuff, the longer it drags out, the only people that really benefit is the lawyers. You know, in the law system and everybody that works there, that's who benefits. Like, it's very, very costly, a lot of damage done. And so he tries to get people to settle things quickly. I think there's a lot to be learned there. I believe Satan wants our conflicts to drag out for a long time. Let that fire burn and burn and burn. Like, do as much damage as possible. And I see that. One of the things he uses to help people settle is what people are passionate about. And he asked him, "What are you passionate about? What are you supposed to be doing in this world?" And he asked him, "What do they love to do?" And then he points out how, as long as this conflict's going on, you're not really able to do that. That thing you really love to do, wouldn't you like to be out there doing that? And that really helps people get the motivation to settle it and get back out there and do what they want to do. Unless their passion is conflict, you know, it usually works pretty good. Which is the case sometimes, you know. Now, with Peacemakers Ministries, they have a great conflict resolution seminar they give. Super, super helpful. It's pretty awesome. And out of that, you know, they have this thing called the anatomy of a conflict. They say conflicts don't just happen. They can actually be broke down. And so I want to use a little bit of that tonight, a couple things out of that to kind of show that anatomy. And the first thing I'm going to write on the board here is that there's a spark, okay? This also applies to romance. Just kidding. I just thought of that. That just came to me. Wow, what a gift, huh? There's a spark, okay? There's an initial thing that starts at, like, the first chest push, you know, boom. Now, I was at a fair, actually, one time, and I hit shoulders with a guy. And it was weird. I was just there, like, I was going to explore and, you know, have a fair experience. I was a teenager, and we just hit shoulders. And all of a sudden, I'm in, like, this big redneck scrap, you know. It was awful. It was super funny. I could kick then, too. Like, I had tobacco between my toes after that fight. Just kidding. Just kidding. Oh, man. Trying to get some ego in. All right, so what's the spark? You know, you don't get the job promotion. Someone gives you a big eye roll while you're talking to them. That's a big spark for me. What's a big spark for you, right? Think about this. Family argues over where they want to spend vacation time. You know, the movie you want to watch. You know, whatever it is, there's usually a spark. And that's really, really cool to see that. I like that as the beginning. Whatever it is, the spark initiates a hurt. Like, you get hurt. Like, there's a comment. There's a look. Someone doesn't text you back. You know, whatever it is that they do or don't do, there's this thing that happens to you. What is that hurt? Like, if someone hurts your feelings, someone says something, does something, what is that? You know, you ever think about that? Like, I've had someone hurt me, and I'm like, what is that? What's going on in there? What is that exactly? And listen to some therapists talk about that hurt. And they actually were saying that it's a mixture of anger, of sadness, of fear, right? Fear of being excluded, fear of being abandoned, fear of being misunderstood, fear of being not loved. You know, that hurt that happens. That's really interesting. I think that's super cool. Sometimes that hurt happens, the spark happens out of a complete misunderstanding, right? I'm listening to a guy talk this week out of the Peacemakers Ministry. The idea was really, really cool. The example was cool. Check out this misunderstanding, okay? High school football teams, and they're in a little stadium. What do you call that? And so there's the home side. You could tell my experience in high school, right? Whatever you call what they do in high school. How you like that? Okay. They're all meeting in that round thing where they play games. And on the home side, there's a band, and there's that side of the team. And on the visitor side, there's the band and that whole team. And so what happened was, the home side, their band director had passed away. And they announced over the intercoms, we want to observe 2 minutes of silence for the passing of our marching band director, right? And so the place goes silent. Well, the thing is, they had been working on the sound system in that arena, and only half of the arena heard the announcement. The home side, right? The one that lost the band director. The other side, the opposing team, did not get the message, right? This is a true story. So they didn't hear it. So as soon as there's a lull, the marching band does what they do. And so they fire up and just start playing. And guess what they played? Another One Bites the Dust, right? True. That's true. Like, this guy is telling us. I'm like, wow. Like, okay, you talk about a spark. Like, wars have been fought over less. That's an intense example. Complete misunderstanding, right? Can you imagine what they must have been saying there? Like, guys, you know, that was crazy. Trombones flying, whatever. All right, I'm going to show you guys something here, and you're going to have to just bear with my little drawing, okay? I'm going to do a really good job, okay? This isn't me. This is just this guy, okay? See, I'm giving him hair. There he is. We're going to go ahead and try to draw a female here. Okay, look at the lovely hair, okay? That's kind of, okay, we'll just stop while I'm ahead. Okay, therapist Sue Johnson, I'm a huge fan of hers. I don't know how many of you guys were here when therapist Deli Dickinson was here doing the EFT breakdown, really cool stuff. When you look at this, there's a thing called a cycle. And any couples therapist that uses this EFT stuff will track a cycle that a couple has. In almost any close relationship, there's going to be a cycle that you can get into. And I just think it's very, very helpful, super, super effective to understand it. But the idea of this cycle is, okay, just real basic. And I could draw a line here tracking it, but it would look all messy, right? And mess up my great drawing, okay? So the idea is he says or does something, right? Someone says or does something, right? The spark, for this example, right? And this person here feels something. I'm going to write feel, okay? But she feels something, right? Everybody see that? Feel, right? That's right here, that what we talked about. Ouch, owie, whatever that was. So he does something. She feels something. Then, because this is how we experience it, right? I make some comment and you're like, right? That. Then she thinks something about herself, about him, about the whole situation. And then she does something or says something, right? And then he feels something. Okay, now I realize that these are actually switched. Like, I mean, technically you think something first, but the way we experience it is if I say something to you that's rude, you kind of experience the feeling first. So this is why we're doing it this way. He does something or says something. She feels, thinks something about herself, about him. She says or does something, and he feels something. Ouch. Okay? Then he thinks something, right? About himself, about her, about the whole situation. And then this cycle goes on. And this is a cycle that an EFT therapist will track. And they'll actually take a lot of time to go through this. And they'll cut it up into really small slices to really get through it and get to the bottom of it. Super cool. Okay? Now, you know, a couple examples. A husband is going to meet his wife at a party. He has to work late. She's been wanting to go to this party. Means a lot to her. And he's kind of late at work, and he's just going to meet her there. He has a really bad day at work. He's been having some bad days at work, and he's kind of feeling it. He gets in the car to meet her at this party. He looks in the mirror, and he realizes, you know, he's really losing his hair pretty quick. And he's like, you know, kind of feeling down. Down about work, down about what he's seeing in the mirror, kind of getting older. Maybe got a little weight, you know, I'm not sure how to feel about this. Heads off to the party, right? Gets to the party, walks in the door, and what does he see? There's his sparkly wife looking up at this guy she's talking to at the party, and he happens to be this super good-looking guy with a full head of hair, and he feels something, right? You see this? Ouch. He thinks something about himself, about her, about the whole situation. Like, you get it? You feeling this? And he walks up to her and says, so, is this what you're going to do all night at the party? And she's like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, you're just going to go flirt with all the guys all night? Is that what you're going to do? And she says, yeah, that is what I'm going to do, right? And the race is on. Like, you can see this happening. Okay, another really good example. A teenage boy hasn't done any homework for almost the whole semester of school. Okay, he's failing, and the mom's been after him, been trying to figure this out, get him to do some work. And it seems like the harder she tries, the harder she comes at him, the more he just runs away, shuts the door, won't come out. Okay, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about with this cycle that really, really helps this kind of stuff. Okay, so after the spark, after we get the hurt, after we feel that, we all have a conflict style. And I think it's cool to kind of recognize, what is our conflict style? What is the style you fight in, right? Some people either attack or they escape. Some people do the hit and run, where they make a really rude comment and then they run, right? We call that the hit and run. But I'm more of an attacker. When I'm in a conflict, I tend to go at the thing because I'm actually reaching for the relationship. So I get a little desperate. So I come at people, right? Some people withdraw because they don't feel safe in a conflict. So they want to be safe, so they run. So we kind of have different styles. And the question is, what is your conflict style? Are you an attacker? Are you a runner, an escaper? Like, I'm an attacker. My wife is an escaper. So that's why we're so skinny, is I'm chasing her around all day. Like, see the side view? That was a side view. Okay, James says that the reasons we quarrel and fight is we have desires that, you know, we want what we want and we don't get it, and so we fight. And that those desires are strong and those desires become demands. And that's kind of what he maps out here of the reason we fight. And that's a tough one. You know, you can actually say those desires become idols, because we're willing to sin to get it, to get what we desire, or we're willing to sin when we're denied that desire. Super interesting. One of the things I like to call it a manual. We all have a manual. See, this says stand on it. I wrote stand on it earlier. Ha! This is my manual. I think everybody has a manual that they've been writing their whole life. I have been. This manual is basically how to treat me. How I want you to treat me, how I demand you to treat me, right? And in it, I've been writing this for years, you know. Let's look at chapter 3, section 2. Just kidding. Now, I won't let anyone read the manual, because then you'll see how ridiculous it is. I wouldn't let you read it, but I will impose my manual on you if you don't live up to its high standard. Right? And oftentimes people are imposing their manual on me, and I'm like, well, I'm not going by your manual, right? And I don't even know what your manual is, but I'm feeling the wrath of it, right? Mine's getting bigger and bigger, like, you know. If anyone wants to read some of this stuff, you know, get some points, it'll be up here later on. No takers on that. Do you have a manual? You know, you have a manual that you said, this is what's important to me, how I want you to treat me, your responses, all that stuff. Really cool. Okay, the good news about the spark, guys, the really good news is most fires start really, really small. A spark is really small. Most forest fires begin really small. In this spark here, you know, we can throw gas on it, right? I mean, we have this spark that's happened. We feel the hurt, but we call this the moment you come upon, okay? This is kind of the big deal, the moment. And that is the time when you've been hurt, the spark has happened, you feel it, you know, it's on, and that's that moment where you have a decision, where you're standing there with a grenade, and you can either pull that pin and blow the whole room up, right? You're holding that pin. Or you can choose a whole other way of thinking about it, right? What's it going to be? You know, and you have your hand on that pin. And I believe that I have pulled the pin many, many times. Like, ouch, that hurt. You rolled your eyes at me, pull the pin, and I throw that grenade. We're all going down, right? I do that. The problem with me is I do it, and I love the people, so I dive on it right after I throw it. And then bits of me just get blown on everybody. And they're all still mad at me, right? It's super annoying. And if you talk to people that know me, they'll say, that is absolutely true. That's exactly what he does. And I'm admitting that up here in front of you guys. Welcome to the underground. So you're in the moment. Do you blow everybody to smithereens? Do you go, you know, down that trail? Or do you make a different choice? A choice to honor God. What will honor God? Not how do I win or lose, None of that. How can I honor God? What will honor God in the middle of this conflict? And it's the choice to go to higher ground. And when I choose what will honor God, oftentimes that will ask me to sacrifice something. You know, it'll require a sacrifice from me. Okay, so it's real easy, and we can get religious here and go, okay, I get it. When the spark happens, now I know the formula, and I get my feelings hurt. Choose to honor God. There's the formula, and now I got it. We can all go do that. But that's not really how it works. You know, if I told you that, then we would be going by our own knowledge of right and wrong. And that's a tree that we're told, we're commanded not to eat from, right? Because now I've just gave you a law or a rule. When the spark happens, honor God. There's the rule. Go do what's right. Don't do what's wrong. And it doesn't work that way. I need more information to be able to choose that kind of thing. I need to be empowered. Anybody believe that? Anybody feel that with me? Like, for me to make that choice, I need more power, right? Okay, so I need empowerment. So under this here, I'm going to write the gospel. I'm going to write gospel, okay? This is what I need in this moment more than anything else. And this is what changes it from a rule to a relationship and to a lifestyle. Let me show you something. Check this out. Okay, this is cool. Now, to you who believe, this is 1 Peter 2:7. To you who believe, wow, this stone is precious. But to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. It says a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. Okay, it says to those who believe, this stone is precious. He's precious to me. Hey, is he precious to you? To us who believe, who've put our faith and confidence in him, he is so precious to us. He's precious to me. He's very dear to our hearts. Now check this out. He says, you are a chosen people. Say me. Check it out. You are a chosen people. Say me. Me, I'm a chosen people. That's me, right? And this is so important when we're reading this to go, that's me, right here. I'm a chosen person. I'm chosen. And this chosen, it's kind of like when they play volleyball out here, when they choose you, Marcella, when he always chooses me, because I'm so awesome, when they choose you, you say yes and you join the team. That's the chosen here. It's not you just get picked and you stand there. This means you're chosen, meaning you've agreed, I'm on the team. Yeah, you're chosen. That's what this is. You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Stand born. This guy who was a crackhead most of my life, a needle user, drug addict, homeless, all this stuff for almost my whole life, I have been brought out of darkness. I'm a child of light. I've been born of light. I am a child, a son of light. Get your mind around that one. I'm a son of light. Wow. Once you were not a people. You weren't even a people. You weren't even a people. What does that mean? It means we were losers, right? Stan, you were a loser, dude. But now, you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you've received mercy. Okay, I'm just saying. I don't know what you do with that. We can look at this with the glaze on our face, yeah. But this has been preserved for thousands of years. People have lost their lives. People have died, guys, to make sure you personally had this message and could hear this message and could believe this message, that your life would be transformed by this message. This message has been preserved over the years by great men and women of faith to make sure you get the baton handed to you so that you could believe what it says. How do you like that? And that means me. That means me. That means me. That's called believing the gospel. I have been empowered. This is the deepest relationship a person could possibly enter. And again, I think Henry was mentioning it. You may not feel it at all, but it's true. See, I'm not talking about whether you feel it. I'm talking about the fact of its truth. I celebrate every day the fact of my sonship, not the feeling of it. I don't come out dancing, right? I don't come out dancing for my house. I'm a son, like I do sometimes. I don't always feel it, but I celebrate, and my life stands on the fact that it's so. And I want you to know right now, tonight, you are a son or daughter of God. I don't mean you feel that way. I mean the fact that you are. You have been born into light, and you can operate that way. Okay, so when the spark happens, when the moment happens, what do you think? See what I mean? When the spark happens, what are you thinking? When you're criticized, when you're mistreated, when you're disappointed, when he's criticized, ouch, right? When he's mistreated, ouch. When he's disappointed, ouch. Listen, guys, when the dragon comes for you, as surely as it will come for you, it will come for you. The dragon will come for you. What are you going to do? What are you going to stand on? And the reality of this relationship here, you know, looking at the reality, this is so interesting. We are born in this world, little tiny babies, and we're pretty pathetic. I don't know about you, but I was super pathetic when I was born. Right? I mean, first thing I did was cry. That's funny. That's the first thing I did. Welcome to the world. Wah! Right? Amongst other things. We are so helpless as human beings, as little infants and babies and growing up. How long do we actually need another person or else we'll die? Like, how long? We are helpless for a long, long time on this planet, right? We know that. Like, we know, in other words, we know in a deep level that loving attachment is our only way we're going to survive. We know that. That we were created to bond. I need, or I'm going to die here. Like, do we need touch as little babies? Or do we just need a machine to feed us milk and food? You know, I mean, we all know about babies dying when they don't have touch, they don't have love, they don't have care. We need a lot of things, in other words, and we know that loving attachment is what we need, or we will die. And so much of what goes on here, we are negotiating for these needs to be met. How many of these arguments, how many of these conflicts, these sparks, are us actually saying, translation, are you really there for me? Right? Do I really count? Can I depend on you? Right? I mean, you think about this. Do I matter to you? Do I really matter to you? Are you really going to be there for me when I need you? How many of these conflicts are really this statement? Because when we don't feel like someone's going to be there for us and we put our emotional weight on them as an attachment figure and we feel that that attachment's being threatened by things that they're doing and saying and cues we're receiving, it's like we're standing on a ledge and we're 100 feet up in the air and we feel like any moment we're gonna fall to the ground. And someone's standing there telling you, just honor God. Just use your communication skills. I can't. I'm terrified. I'm terrified that I'm about to die. This is what's going on within these people. I think we have to show some serious sympathy for where they're at. And so what I'm trying to say is, developing a secure, strong bond and loving attachment with people, with the community, it's hard work, but building a strong attachment with each other and with God, really depending on one another, really depending on the gospel that it is true, doesn't make you weak. It makes you mighty. It makes you mighty. You know, we live in a country where independence is celebrated way ridiculous, and it doesn't work that way. Living in relationship where we have a true bond and a loving attachment, where we know you're there for me, you love me, you're for me, not against me, and you're going to be there, and you believe the gospel, and you walk in that, will make you so mighty. You'll do great things. That will actually give you a place to run to and launch from when you're threatened and you feel hurt and you feel pain. This is all stuff proven in science, guys. A person with a bonded, loving attachment, a secure attachment, can launch into the world and explore fearlessly. And they can run to them when they hurt and when they have need. And the other thing that they have the ability to do that a person without that attachment is they have the ability to emotionally regulate. They can deal with their emotions as they come up because they have such an attachment. Is this striking a chord with anybody here? Anybody getting this? Couples that last the longest have the ability to soothe each other emotionally. They have the ability to track each other's emotions and connect here and soothe one another there. MRI studies, almost all of us have heard these about the shock they would put in. You know, they put someone in this MRI thing and shock them. Then they would have a stranger hold their hand and the pain would register a little bit less. And then they would have a loving attachment figure, someone they loved and trusted, husband or wife, come and hold their hand. And when they give them a shock, it would be so much lower. Like the pain, they could deal with so much more pain when a loving attachment figure was holding their hand and present with them. I mean, what does that tell us, you know? They've done studies with the people in the Scud missile attacks overseas. And they could handle these attacks so much better when they felt attached and bonded to the people they were fighting next to and with as a team. Firefighters can fight fires way better when they have a bonded attachment with the team. It's all true stuff. It's great stuff. So we have to be able to look above, like an above view and a below view when we're looking at these situations. So check it out. The husband who's losing his hair looks in the mirror. He walks in the party, sees his sparkly wife looking at this real handsome guy with this big head of hair, right? Remember that story? He sees her, and there's the spark. How different would it be if he spoke from here? How different would it be if he walked up to her and said, "Hey, man, I've been having a real rough go at work. I'm really feeling it. Are you going to be here for me? I'm losing my hair. I'm getting older. You're looking great. I love you. I'm scared. I don't know what I'm going to do. Are we together? Because I'm feeling it. I don't have it like I used to. And I love you, and I want to do this with you, and I'm afraid right now. There's a lot of good-looking guys here, and you're looking really nice. I'm scared." What would that draw out of her? Right? What would that draw out of you if someone spoke from there, that place, like real? Now, the teenager with the homework, that's a true story from a therapist, Dr. Sue Johnson's son. And she came to him and said, "Okay, forget the grades, forget the semester stuff, forget the high school, forget it. I just come clean with you. I'm scared. You're scaring me. I'm just afraid of all this. I'm terrified." I can't connect with you. I don't know what's going on. I don't care anymore about the school stuff. I just want you to know I'm scared. And I don't know what's going to happen with your future or you. I'm terrified. And then he comes forward and says, the school's scaring me. I'm afraid I'm letting everybody down. I'm afraid I'm letting you down. Every time you come at me with that report card, all I can do is run because I'm scared. And I don't know what to do. I feel overwhelmed. And they actually sat down and came up with a plan for him to do makeup homework, sit down with the school, come up with this way to do it, and they began working together. Is this crazy? Because she recognized the cycle that was going on. So basically what I'm saying is, so often we go around just terrifying each other. Right? That's what we're doing. We're going around scaring each other. You're scaring me because of this. I'm scaring you because of this. We're scaring each other, and that is so much of what's going on. So we have a spark, we had the moment, believe the gospel, honor God. That's kind of the pattern. This is what we want to rewire our brains. The ability to take the higher road is going to be to believe the gospel. One last verse, Proverbs 19:11. A person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. A lot of stuff can be solved by, is this really worth fighting for, right? I want to say that when you look at the disciples, you look at Jesus, you look at the great men and women of faith, they were not at peace all the time, but they were actively working towards peace and making it. And they were actively building bridges, not walls. And it cost them their lives. That's powerful. And so the scripture promises us this. When you live that way, a bridge builder, believing the gospel, honoring God, you will be called a son of God. You will look like who you are. You'll actually look like the family that you have been born into. You'll look like a son. You'll look like a daughter of God. And that's blessed. This has been a wonderful series, really rocked me. I hope you guys have enjoyed this Beatitudes. This has pushed me super hard. It's been great. Let me close this out in prayer. Father, thank you so much for everything you've done in the gospel. I pray that each and every one of us would be able to look at conflict in our lives in a brand new way. And we'd be able to do what honors you and see that. And first and foremost, believe in who we are. Believe what you've done to make us sons and daughters of God. To really bask in that. To really take the time. To spend the time to believe it. Those who believe, it's precious. It's so precious. It's precious to me. Let that truth transform our lives. And we would actively be out there making peace. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys. Cool.
Lost are saved, find their way at the sound of your great name. All condemned, feel no shame at the sound of your great name. Oh!